Welcome to the Peptide Summit. My name is Dr. Matt Cook, and I'm here with my very good friend, Dr. Eric Gordon. He's the president of Gordon Medical Research and the clinical director of Gordon Medical Associates. And he's one of the best doctors that I know. He's a deep thinker. He's an amazing person, and he's one of my favorite people to talk to. And so when I found out that today, actually, I knew that I was talking to him, I'm just 100% looking forward to getting into talking about complex illness, how to think about peptides, and how to think of taking care of really complex, difficult immune problems, be that long COVID, be that Lyme disease, be that mold. And so let's get into it. Welcome to the Peptide Summit, and I'm just totally delighted to have you here, Eric.
Well, thank you, Matt. That was a very kind introduction. You're one of my favorite people. Also, just love, because every time I talk to you, I learn something, which is just always fun, you know, because this world of, I call it, the chronic complex illness is something that is just an amazing journey. You learn humility every day, and you get excited every day because you bump into people who you can help, and that really fills you with humility when you realize you've tried, and then you find people who've been sick for years, and you press the right buttons or help them take the right steps, and they get better. And that's the amazing thing about medicine, I think, and especially the kind of medicine that you and I get to practice, which is a joy. You know, I feel bad sometimes for the guys who are stuck with, cookbook medicine instead of the ability to use your mind and really listen, have the time that we get to listen to our patients. So it's amazing. But chronic illness for me is just really understanding how the immune system has gotten confused. People often think that their immune systems are broken, and they really, that does exist. There are people who have deficiencies, in parts of the immune system that are just not strong enough, and that's there. But the vast majority of the people that you and I see were people who are otherwise healthy until a certain age, and then one or two or three events happened and they started getting sick, and then along the way they just stayed sick. And usually those people, they're not broken, which is the good news. But the system is a little confused. And the model that really helped me understand this was developed by Dr. Navio, Robert Navio, or Bob as he likes to be called amongst his friends, is that of what he named the cell danger response. And and he's kind of made that a little bigger now, calling it the health cycle. But the cell danger response aspect of it has allowed me to make more sense out of the symptoms and immune dysregulations that we come in contact every day. It's one of those concepts that I can make very confusing, because when I first learned it, I learned it by reading his papers and talking with him, and he's such a font of knowledge about biochemistry that I would try to follow all the details and get thoroughly confused because I reached my level of ignorance. And so I have to be careful when I explain it to people, because as you well know, when the better you know something, the simpler you can explain it. So just as an overarching idea, the cell danger response just explains that when your body is confronted with danger of any kind, stress of any kind, the mitochondria, the energy producing aspect of the cell, the organelle in the cell that we think of as an energy producer, also takes on its other role of conductor of the immune response. Okay. And so when in the cell danger response, it's just realizing that there's kind of three phases of what your body does when it is exposed to danger. And it doesn't have to go through all three steps when the injury is mild, in the everyday stresses of things, it kind of skirts them. But when you have a significant injury, whether it's a cut, a wound, or an infection, or a toxic exposure, it has to go through these three steps of first repairing the injured cell, whether and also limiting the energy supply for the intruder, because usually this was designed to fight viruses probably, and maybe some prevent the tying up of toxic of toxins, especially some of the things that tie up sulfur groups. Okay, but now we're getting too many details. Just think of it simply. The mitochondria, they sense that they're not getting as much nutrients as they should be getting. And when that happens, they begin to they turn down the production of ATP. And so, and that way they deprive energy and raw materials to the intruder. I always say it's a little bit like, in the old days, you would burn the fields and seal up the castle. Walls, and that's what happens. The cell during that CDR1 cell membrane thickens, so you can't, things don't get out as easily and new information doesn't get in as easily. And so that's CDR1. CDR2 is you begin to repair, you begin to build new cells, and at that point the mitochondria are working, but your cell is still pretty dependent on glucose. And in CDR3, the cell is repaired and it begins to really restore the communication between it and the rest of and the other cells around it. So, I mean, each one of these things can be very detailed. And just 1, 2, 3, limit the reproduction of whatever of the intruder, 2, repair the damage that was done, and 3, restore communication between that cell and the body. Now, and many diseases happen because parts of our system, parts of our organs get stuck in one of those three places. We can see, heart disease and diabetes happening when the cell gets stuck in that second place where it's rebuilding, but it's not restoring full communication. And so you get scarring or just hypertrophy of parts of the organ.
Okay, so then I'll take that. So cell danger response, a cell is faced with stress. And let's, for today, we're kind of thinking about immune stress because mm-hmm. we're thinking about patients with chronic infections immune dysregulation from chronic infections that may be viral or maybe post-viral or maybe bacterial, like things like Lyme disease or long COVID.
Right.
And so then as a result of that stress, the cells sort of go into a protective mode where they don't make energy as efficiently or as usefully in the mitochondria to sort of downregulate energy and kind of potentially not. And then could that explain symptoms of fatigue, for example?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. And that's why when people are really ill, taking more CoQ10 and carnitine and alpha lipoic acid and all those good things don't do much. And it's very frustrating. You see a lot of people when they're really ill, they come in with shopping bags full of supplements and it's not changing much. Now, as they get better, those things start to work. You see a lot of people who are like just a little tired, they take, the CoQ10 and other supplements and they feel better. I mean, this stuff really works, but it only works when your body can actually use it. And when you're in that CDR1 and sometimes in CDR2, you're not able to fully make use of these nutrients because the mitochondria have changed their form and their shape and their function. And so they're not broken. For a long time, people in our community look, and many of them still do actually, think about the mitochondria as being sick when people have fatigue. But they're not sick. They're acting just like they're supposed to do. This is their function. Their function is to limit the raw materials available to the virus, and to get the nucleus to start producing prooxidant chemicals, because those prooxidants are what we use to kill bugs, to kill other things. So they're not bad. They're only bad when they get stuck on. And I think that's the essence. I think the simple, I think actually of all the words that I said, the most important thing for people to realize is that when you're ill, there are some, most illnesses that develop in our adulthood are not because the system is broken. It's because it's stuck in a loop of trying to fix a problem that it can't quite complete fixing, okay? But it's different than you, that the organ or the cell is damaged. It's often just stuck reacting to a signal that may or may not be there. I mean, you know, we were talking just long COVID is the great example, or chronic Lyme. You know, just, I mean, chronic Lyme is something that's been dear to my heart for the last 20 something years, ever since I started really actively treating it. You know, we've had that great debate. Is it, do we have to kill the bug, or do we have to, you know, detox the body? And, or as the infectious disease doctors would like to say, if you've killed the bug for a month, you're done killing, and you should just, now you have post-Lyme syndrome, which is an auto, they feel is an autoimmune disease. Well, I think all of that is true. It just depends on the individual, and it's often there in varying degrees. But many times, it's you know, what we see is that sometimes the bug can be gone, but a piece of the bug can be left in the system.
Oh, so that's so good, because that's basically kind of like what's happening with long COVID. You can have the virus is gone. The virus is not replicating in the body anymore, but there's a little spike protein that may be floating around in the body.
Yeah. And then it's interesting because Dr. Bruce Patterson, the fellow who's, you know, kind of proposed and this concept of the S1 part of the spike protein being stuck in some of our white blood cells, he's also done some work that suggests that there's some glycoprotein from Lyme that gets stuck in the system. And God knows, and to be fair, you know, some of the naturopaths that I worked with, you know, early on, actually, you know, Byron White was one of them who would actually, he even developed in his formulas these things where he said, you know, he would get the cell to release particles. You know, I just didn't understand how he knew this, but he was doing these things intuitively. But I think it looks like he was right, because I'd always wonder why sometimes his remedies, one or two drops, would like really flare the system. And, you know, it couldn't have been the herbs, because there was nothing in there. And it does seem that that's true, that we're left with pieces of often proteins, or could be, you know, combinations of pieces of these bacteria and viruses that keep stimulating our immune system, and the bug is gone, you know. So if we can sometimes get the immune system to relax, it can reboot itself. It just, you know, that was Neil Nathan had a great, I mean, that was, I have to say, that was one of his great phrases, is because it really is that, you know, just like you unplug your computer and you plug it back in and it starts to work again. You know, sometimes when we can get the body to change its pattern, okay, it can go back to normal.
That's why I named my company BioReset.
Right. That is.
But it was like that idea. And, you know, we were doing so many stellate ganglion blocks, you know, we were thinking of like a biological reset of the brain, but in a way it's it's a reset of the immune system. It's a reset of neurological physiology, and everything is sort of intimately tied together. So then imagine, so we go back to this, because I want to repeat what you said and then repeat and then keep and then kind of continue along this line. I like it. Yeah. So let's say there's an infection, there's some physiological stress, and then as a result of that stress, it can, one thing that would be a cell danger response type of thing that would happen is the mitochondria start to pull back. And then the cell basically goes into a little bit of a dysfunctional state because it's reacting against the virus. Now, not only could that happen to an active viral infection or an inactive like Lyme, Borrelia, or Bartonella infection, if there was a little bit of the protein of that bacteria or virus that happened to stick around in the immune system, that could also, in certain parts of the body or wherever it was being affected, lead to a dysfunctional either cell biology state, cell danger, or a dysfunctional sort of immune system in general, if some of the cells in the immune system were being affected by that piece of infection.
It's this circle. And one thing I just want to see, the cells aren't dysfunctional. The cell is doing the normal function that it's supposed to do, because when you get infected with a virus, you want to suddenly switch and you want to deprive the virus of the wrong nucleotides so it can't build its own machinery. So you, it's, this is a good response, but I always like to compare things to psychology. And because, psychology and like Chinese medicine and Indian and Ayurvedic, they have much better stories than we, or better ways of putting things. Because medicine, because we want to know A causes B, we tend to get very linear, which is really useful. But it's not good at understanding broad concepts. It's good at understanding that when we break the system apart, we can use very linear concepts. A cause B, and that's really great. But when we're talking about an interactive system with trillions of interactions happening, then we have to be a little more loose. And then we have to have story, okay? And it doesn't make it less scientific, it just, because it makes it more accurate about what's really happening. So what I'm saying is that, when you learn a behavior anger is the best example, okay? If you learn when you're young to express anger clearly, okay, you can often get your needs met, okay? But if you use that tool over and over again, for everything, you have a fairly dysfunctional life. Angry people, they might get what they want, but they don't get what they really want, which is friends and lover. There's a harshness to their lives. There's an emptiness. Yeah. We can all see that. We know people who are angry all the time, and you might like them, but that's what an immune system that is always going after an enemy is like, okay? It's angry all the time. Now, if you're too passive and just nice to everybody, you can be well-loved, but you kind of get stomped on a lot. It's being able to have that place where you can be appropriately angry in the moment and then relax and go back to a more normal, easy interaction with the world. And that's what we want for our immune system. And so that's
okay. I'm going to take that. So then imagine that I've got this balance between an immune system that's too passive, that's doing nothing, and too angry, that's kind of fighting too hard. There's a term that called immune system regulation. And it turns out everything that is we think of as good, stem cells, certain biologics, peptides, there's almost all things that are helpful for immune problems, in some way regulate and balance the immune system. Tell me about that. Tell me how you think about that, how you put that together.
Well, to me, that's why I love those things. I include, herbs, ozone, exosomes, stem cells, peptides. These are all things that balance the immune system. They give the immune system enough information and let the immune system then take what it needs to restore balance. Because is that most of the time, when you have immune dysregulation or the dysregulation of the immune system is because some cell type, you know, whether it's your mast cell or more likely, you know, some Treg cell that's not working like it should, you know, or, you know, a toxin that your body can't get rid of and it keeps pressing the alarm button, you know, because it keeps depriving some group of cells of the information of the nutrient that it needs. And that turns on the mitochondria to go, there's danger here. And when that might, and see, so I'm going to tell you a little bit more about the CDR. One of the main tenets of the CDR is that when the mitochondria senses danger, it starts to put ATP, the normal kind of like the gas of your body, you know, the way you store most of your energy is ATP. And it usually is a very, very minuscule amount on the outside of the cell surface. It goes up like a millionfold when that mitochondria senses danger. Okay. And that is a nonspecific immune activation that tells your body there's danger. That signals your immune system at a very basic level. This is another example of peptides, because ATP is a nucleotide, it's not quite a peptide, but these smaller molecules that are nonspecific signals that just, and then we take our immune system that is so little, you know, to first the innate immune system just goes, you know, danger. And it's designed to recognize like all four-legged creatures. and so it will try to kill you whether you're a cat or a dog. And then the acquired immune system begins to come on and it can begin to, you know, discriminate. But when you keep releasing ATP, you keep triggering that innate immune system. So in order to get the anger out of your body, you have to find a way to quiet that down, okay? And that's where these anti-inflammatory things, such as you said, you know, exosomes and the peptides and, you know, just anything that has a strong anti-inflammatory signal, it can sometimes, it's like, again, I you know, instead of going into the myriad details of biochemistry and which we, you know, every time you read about immunology, we keep learning another detail, okay? And that's why I said it's better to think in these overwhelming stories, okay? Or not overarching stories of like safety and danger, because that actually gives us more information. So when the system gets a little bit of information that says things are safer, and we kind of get like an immune cell, like again, so when we quiet the mast cell down, okay, the mast cells are a great example. You quiet the mast cell down, then the rest of the body quiets down, okay? And if you do that long enough, just like people, you know, and when you have a really angry person and you can really relax them and make them feel safe, okay, they stop causing trouble. Right. I mean, it's so, and you know, like when you try to explain it through the immunology, you get more and more details and more story, which I love, but it doesn't really, it helps me understand what happens. But when you give somebody exosomes or, you know, or like KPV or, you know, some of the other, or BPC, you know, it's nice to know. Yeah, these are peptides. It's nice to know we can read about the research that shows, well, you know, maybe KPV might have some effect on lowering TNF-alpha or something, like, you know, some obscure molecule, okay? But at the end of the day, what we have to understand is that the system quiets down, okay? Because the explanation is nice to understand, but it's still only a partial explanation. It's just that we have to get that the body is in constant balance. And when you do a stellate ganglion, I mean, I was going to riff on one thing you said before, like when you do the stellate ganglion block, You know, you're quieting the sympathetic nervous system, and that quiets the immune system because it's one big bag of information. They're all talking to each other. And so that's what we have to keep in mind when we deal with chronic illness, is that don't get hung up on having to fix one thing. You know, you influence one system, and then you see how, if the body goes along with you, and that's why there are so many different therapies that work. You know, everybody always wants the one therapy that's going to make them better. And the beauty is that, you know, I'm sure there is the disease that needs the one therapy, but many times if you can quiet down one aspect of the immune system and make the body feel a little safe, I mean, that's where, you know, where for some people, prayer and meditation, or just being in a quiet environment, begins to allow healing. Mm-hmm. You know, and for other people, that's not going to work. You know, it doesn't mean that being in a quiet environment and a healing environment doesn't help you heal.
Okay, perfect. So then now I'm going to tie this together, and I'm going to take us down into a little bit of a journey into this thing called SIRS. And so, and you've been at this longer than anybody else that I know. And then I'm going to agree with you on almost everything. So then that's going to be good. And we'll talk about this. So the, and I think this is all going to come together, but imagine that somebody may have gotten exposed to a water damaged building, and then they had mold. And then that mold causes inflammation in the central nervous system that, and call that topic one. Another thing that could happen, topic two, is maybe you got bit by a tick, and then you can either have a little bit of the remnants of that bacteria, the classic one is Borrelia, or maybe you still have that bacteria living in your body as a stealth infection, and it can live in cytosols, or Bartonella, or maybe Epstein-Barr. So there's a whole bunch of different infections that we've been taking care of for a long time. And these have been challenging infections for people, because once they sort of take hold and have their effect on the body goes into this angry immune system state. And so cell danger response is one way of describing that angry immune system. Another way of describing that angry immune system is SIRS. And so then maybe, and I think that fundamentally it could be Lyme disease, it could be mold. And so we can talk about the biology, a little bit of that. Tell me about SIRS and how you think about it. And then we're going to go into some of the interesting testing and epigenetics around that.
Well, the interesting thing, I mean, SIRS, I mean, you know, it's been around for a while. I mean, I always think that this is Richie Shoemaker's, you know, concept. Even I'm sure other people have like all great ideas. They come from many areas. And Richie is somebody who I feel has done an immense, I mean, for myself personally, he really opened my eyes to just so many pieces of immunology and how the body works. I have great respect for Richie, but and what I've with the chronic inflammatory response syndrome, I mean, that is just another way of talking about the CDR. I mean, because I said they're all basically, we're just looking through slightly different lenses, you know. I think would argue that many of the things that he calls that label SIRS are what happens when you are stuck in that CDR2. But that's you know, just playing back and forth. So, you know, and Richie came from the world of biologic toxins. His first experience was with cyanobacteria, and that's how he came up with the brilliant idea of cholestyramine in the body. And I mean, you know, naturopaths have used binders for a long time, but Richie was the one who really like pushed it forward. You know, and you know, serendipitous. I mean, this is what makes I have great respect for his mind. Is that serendipitous realization that he treated somebody for diarrhea And he gave them cholestyramine to bind to, which can stop diarrhea, and it cleared their mind. And he went, oh my God, this isn't, you know, what's going on here? And he kept doing deep dives. So over the years, he expanded this concept, and he started to really work with initially with a lot of mold. And now he's expanded it to actinomyces, you know, so it's bacteria as well as mold, water damage, building are his common theme, that these critters, which are ubiquitous in the environment, overgrow when we give them, you know, plasterboard and water, or basically, you know, any carbohydrate sort, you know, like wood and water sitting, will get a lot of critters to grow. And they produce, you know, normally in the environment, these are background levels, but when they get concentrated, they start to affect people, and especially sensitive people. And one of the things that I believe is that most of us are able to deal with most of the actinobacteria toxins and the mycotoxins, unless we have something else that has screwed up our system and has changed our immune system. And that's often, in my mind, Lyme or some other chronic bacterial infection. But, you know, that may or may not be true. But that seems to be, that's one of the reasons why I think over the years, I've always done Dr. Shoemaker's testing, but I've always disagreed with him on what it means. Because he often felt that his biomarkers for the chronic inflammatory response syndrome in the early days were reflective of mold. And to my mind, that's where we, they were just markers that your innate immune system is pissed off. Okay, you know, when you're, he would measure, you know, your C4A, your tumor necrosis, your TGF-beta-1, not tumor, you know, MSH, MMP9, these are all alphabet soup of, like, you know, of your immunology.
How would you define innate immune system for somebody who's first listening to this?
Okay, well, the innate immune system is the immune system that activates when that first 3 days, or especially in that first 3 days of infection or injury, or in the first few hours of injury, that involve your neutrophils. Like I said, this is an immune system that I said in the beginning that recognizes patterns. Okay, of danger. It's not specific. It doesn't know if you're dealing with, Lyme or influenza or COVID. You know, it just knows that the cell is infected with something that's using its energy, and the cell signals that it's in danger, and the neutrophil will come and kill that cell. Okay, it's very, very primitive, but very effective. Without the innate immune system, we're dead. You know, acquired immune system, you can have deficiencies in and missing parts of, and, you know, you might get a lot of sinus infections, but you do okay, you know, you kind of can fetch along there. So the innate immune system is just your first response. Okay, your acquired immune system takes usually a few days to get going, and that's why we give people vaccines, to touch an interesting subject, is because the vaccines train our immune system, so when we see the infection, we already know that it's X, you know, it's Joe, it's not just anybody, okay? So what Dr. Shoemaker did with the chronic inflammatory response syndrome is that he started to see that, well, that these were, you know, non-specific immune markers, but they're often related to water damage building exposure for while they run rampant in people. And in my experience, the water damage building aspect, or the mold exposure, whether it be, is a component of what's going on. And that's where we've differed over the years, because Dr. Shoemaker, really, his idea was that Lyme, if you treated Lyme for 3 weeks with antibiotics, it was gone. And, you know, the Igenex tests were just too sensitive and were inaccurate and blah, 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 blah. And, his current, people who I really respect, many of them still believe that. And I just think that that's what happens when you don't treat enough people with this, you know, because, you know, if you're just treating, if you, you know, the Sears treatments, the pyramid that they have for treating Sears is very, very nice. But if you don't know how to deal with the infections as well, or with the mast cell issue, you know, it's everything for most people. Now there's, luckily, there's a lot of people who, if they just follow, you know, the Sears protocol, will improve and will get better. I mean,
So then this is a good one. And so then if I was to kind of contextualize that within the story that you said, then certain triggers can come in, and the trigger could be an immune conversation, or it could be an emotional conversation. We could trigger it if certain things happen that we didn't want to happen. And so then a trigger could trigger the immune system into being kind of angry. And then when that happens, then there's a whole bunch of consequences of that. One of the things that could trigger could be any of the we call them vector-borne infections. So ticks, Bartonella, Borrelia, all of those things that are in the Lyme category. So, and now water damage building could be mold, could be actinomyces, could be gram-negative rods. It's probably a little bit of all of those. Viral things could be things like Epstein-Barr and CMV, could be long COVID. And, you know, we're hearing more people say, oh, you know, long COVID kind of begins to look like Sears. And then I think for people like you and me, it's almost like that angry immune system walks in the door. And I started realizing, boy, you know, the long COVID patients look just like all of the patients that we've been taking care of for the last 10 years.
Yeah. And no, absolutely. They look the same. And that's why I so appreciate Dr. Patterson's work, because he gave us some new tools. I mean, that was what I really appreciated, is because by identifying that, the fact that these monocytes, which are a white blood cell that, just for people, that in the bloodstream are monocytes, the same cell, if it's in your tissue, is called a macrophage. Welcome to why immunologists should be shot, because just biology. we have three names for everything, because everything was usually discovered by different people at different times, given the same name, until we figure out that it was the same thing. But we never go back to one name. It just depends on what religion, you know, what group you belong to. So anyway, sorry about that.
So then here we go. We've got this cell. It's a cell in the immune system called a monocyte. And then, that monocyte, let's say that person had COVID, that monocyte is going to be one of the white blood cells that's going to go to the lungs or the sinuses or wherever it is. And it's going to start an immune response to trying to fight that viral infection. Also, if you got vaccinated, that monocyte might come over and pick up some of that spike protein as part of generating an immune response to the vaccine. And so then whether that monocyte picked up some S1 protein in your airway, or whether it picked it up from the vaccine, then now that monocyte's got to hold on to that protein. And so there's this theory that Dr. Patterson, that monocyte becomes inflammatory and then is part of the angry immune system. That's like a new video game.
Well, it's then, you know, again, that monocyte, you know, should do that, but it's supposed to go away. See, this is the whole point, is that these cells, like, should have limited lifespan. The failure to die in the body is, like, you know, and what the extreme is cancer, but chronic inflammatory diseases are the other example of cells and cells that don't die when they're supposed to. I've been thinking a lot about this. A lot of our chronically ill people have very high Epstein-Barr, you know, HH6, CMV, all these herpes family viruses that that have very high IgGs. They stay forever. You know, I mean, and we're supposed to have low levels of these hanging around, so we do recognize the bug when we see it again, and we don't get sick. We just go, oh, it's there, and we can tamp, knock off the few cells that have it and go on. But, you know, people who stay chronically ill have very high levels of these, and immunoglobulins are inflammatory. they help set off other cells. So I think that's part of this long-standing issue. But getting back to the long COVID people, you know, the insight that Dr. Patterson has given us that, you know, when it's a monocyte involved, and we don't know how many other chronic infections have this mechanism. I mean, that's the issue, is what we always wind up with. Like, we learn a new mechanism and we think it's in everybody. You know, we don't know how many other chronic, you know, he has worked in the past on dengue. That's what got him into this. So maybe chronic dengue is the same thing. You've got this monocyte that is holding on to a piece of protein that it should have destroyed. It should have either destroyed the protein, or the monocyte itself should have died, in which case the protein would have gotten rid of as well. And the rest of us do fine. You know, everybody else, you know, God knows what, how many hundred million Americans have been vaccinated or have had COVID by now, you know, and most of us don't have this problem, you know. Right. So when things are working well, this doesn't happen. It's a failure to self-regulate. It's a failure for that monocyte to get the signal to die, you know, and that's where I'm tying this into this whole story of persistent noise. I mean, this is why people get mast cell activation, okay, is because you have a persistent immune irritant that keeps turning on the mast cells. And after a while, you probably develop clones of mast cells that are now hypervigilant. Okay. Because, like, just to talk about the mast cells for a minute, I mean, because that's a big issue. I mean, like, you know, I always say every few years we learn something new. You know, I remember, like, you know, it was all Lyme, then it was all Babesia, then it was all Bartonella, you know.
And then we were at the meeting. I was sitting with you at the meeting when he gave the lecture on mast cell. Remember at the ILADS right. meeting? Yeah, when was that?
Yeah.
Nobody knew about it at that time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Dr. Afrin, I mean, I knew about it early because, again, I learned everything from my patients. I had a very, very smart patient who, you know, she had migraines and severe GERD, and she got scoped, and she actually had, you know, even the they found, this was, you know, because the elevated mast cells in her esophagus, and she quickly, right after that, found Dr. Afrin's book and sent it to me, and suddenly I went, oh my God, made so much sense. You know, I mean, like, I've been treating all these people with migraines, with GERD, with irritable bowel, and with interstitial cystitis, you know. And, like, his point is, when you see people with four or five diseases, maybe they don't have four or five different diseases. Maybe they got one thing. Now, what we had to teach Dr. Afrin was that these persistent, because he thought these just happened, you know. I mean, I had dinner with him many years ago, and when he first started teaching this stuff, and he was, this happens. And I tell him, no, it's happening because these people have chronic infections. And it took him a few years before he came around to that. He's a regular doc, and he's a brilliant regular doctor, so he thinks. But it took him a while to get that. Yeah, if you keep bombarding the immune system with noise, okay, which is what a chronic infection does, it keeps telling your body that you're in danger. And I said, this is the neurotic, this is what COVID has done to so many. I just want my one little rant and I'll shut up. But COVID has done this to so many of my patients, and I hate it, is that COVID is bad, no question about it. But I've had so many people who are now living in utter fear, which is the last thing an already upregulated immune system needs, right, is to be in constant fear. And we have done that, and I think it's just a terrible disservice, because, you know, if you're 40 years old, and even if you've got chronic inflammatory illness, you're probably, my experience is, you're not dying from COVID. okay? I haven't lost any patients to COVID, you know, because we A, can treat them. That's another dirty secret. There are lots of treatments for COVID, but the point is they're not dying. They're not, you know, hypertensive older people, you know, dying, who were dying. Not now, they're not even dying, thank God. So it's just fear is such a driver of the immune system. And I just beg people to, like, please don't fall into that place. Cause
right. No, I like it. It's the kind of, and it's, there's a bimodal distribution on the fear too, because it's enjoyable for me to kind of meet some of the people that don't have any fear, which, and it's kind of entertaining. We see less of that in California.
Yes, unfortunately.
So then I'm going to take you on this, Matt, because, and what I wanted to do is kind of talk through a handful of these things, and we're going to then kind of think about a little bit about testing and a little bit about therapy. So then people can get these infections. And so we've been talking about them, and there's a host of different ones, and it's basically the obvious ones that affect people. And then as a result of that, there are these cells, and these cells, these mast cells, talk me through. So when they get, and so then we talked about the angry immune system. So then I'm going to kind of keep going on this theme. So then suddenly there's this angry mast cell. And if that mast cell, it's this immune cell, gets too angry, then it will do something. I'm going to let you say what that is. And then it turns out there's a bunch of normal medication that people have heard of, both, and some of those are going to be just regular medicine you can get at Walgreens and CVS. And then another one, then we also use some peptides for this, but to try to deal with the fact that these cells are angry and a little bit overactive. But tell me about what that is and why infections do that to people.
Well, first of all, the mast cell was our first immune cell. When you got a multicellular organism that finally reached a point that it actually had an immune system, because the mast cell was the first of the immune cells. Before you had, you know, lymphocytes and T cells and B cells, mast cells came first. Okay, because of that, they talk to almost everything else in the body. You know, we thought of mast cells, at least I did, as just something that had to do with allergy. You know, when I first got into this, it was like, you know, mast cells, big deal, you know, rashes, hives,
because they release histamine.
Right. They release histamine. But the problem is they release about 1,000 other chemicals as well. And they have myriad effects on people. But they turn on everything now. So that's why they can produce. That's why the mast cell, in depending on, and this is what makes this whole chronic illness thing so crazy, is that depending on your genetics and how you're put together, you know, your mast cells go off and you just might get migraines, you know, while the other person is going to get, you know, is going to get rashes and going to get a tight throat. But some people don't get the, and like the tight throat stuff, they just get diarrhea. You know, it depends on which system is a little more hair trigger in other ways. Where is your immune system a little more upregulated? You know, that's why, you know, when you get, you can get more joint issues, or you can get more gut issues. It just depends on how you're put together. So, but getting this mast cell quieted down, it's like, you know, it's like getting the drunk out of the party. You know, it all simmers down afterwards. You know, you get rid of the one crazy rowdy person and everybody else goes back to more or less normal conversation. They stop yelling and screaming because they have to talk over the crazy person or drunk person.
What would be kind of, give me your top three sort of over the counter type of medications, and then why do they help for mast cells that are overactive?
The top three are just basically, you know, the antihistamines. And we have the H2 blockers are the ones that, you know, like the you know, the Benadryl and da da da, and the H2s are like, you know, the Pepcid, you know, Tagamet. What are the other, you know, basically any of the first generation of antacids, more, well, not first and second generation of antacids, you know. And then I prefer, you know, Zyrtec, I like in Allegra, or if people have money, I think it's Zizol or Levocetirizine. I actually learned how to say that. One of the things about medicine is we have generic names, which are usually unpronounceable, but make doctors feel much more scientific. But it's the right hand Levo. It's the left-handed version of Claritin. You know, like most chemicals come in a left-hand or a right-handed right. version, and so an it's the left-handed version. And it seems to have some really nice better anti-inflammatory effects. Except, unfortunately, it's a little expensive. So Zyrtec is probably my favorite for just starting off simply. But people who are very sensitive need to get these compounded. It's just easiest to start with the cheap stuff. But if you react to these, and if you react to two of them, this is a good chance you're reacting to the fillers, you know, in the capsules and not the chemicals themselves. You know, not 100%, but that's a pretty good guess. So,
good. So I'm gonna pause you there. So then, what else? So imagine somebody might have gotten COVID and their immune system is angry, or they might have gotten bit by a tick and their immune system was angry, or they might live in an apartment like I did that had mold in it and then their immune system got angry. So any one of these things can cause the immune system to get angry, and then that primordial original immune cell got too activated, and then that can kind of get that part of the immune system can get stuck active. And so then people can have symptoms that are kind of mast cell symptoms. And probably these were nebulous things that we weren't even paying attention to, but also maybe our environment is more toxic and so more people are having it. And then maybe more people are having infections, certainly now. And so then as a result of that, so then what happened is people started giving these over-the-counter H1 and H2 blockers that are kind of histamine blockers that kind of calm down that cell. And so sometimes like people, well, certain foods, then once that those mast cells get triggered, now all of a sudden certain foods, so like, for example, meat that has like leftover meat that's been left out for a day can be a big trigger. So there's a variety of triggers. Somebody might come and see you, and then you would give them one of these medicines, which can be very helpful for people. And there's a whole bunch of protocols around just calming down mast cell. Now, then another thing that I could do is we could try to calm those mast cells down with peptides.
Right.
Tell me about your thoughts on kind of that side of the equation.
Yeah, well, again, you know, and embarrassing, I haven't really done a deep dive on the literature directly related at mast cells, but they work on mast cells. I mean, they work because the whole system is in communication. Mast cells are aggravated often because other cytokines, these are the chemicals that immune cells release to tell each other to come to the area or to reproduce, get released. And a lot of these cytokines, you know, and mast cells are very sensitive to these cytokines. So, and that's where we use things like, I really like the KPV and the TB4 frag, because, you know, the KPV is a derivative, is a piece of something called MSH, melanocyte stimulating hormone, okay? And melanocyte stimulating hormone is a really cool thing. Obviously, it does stimulate you will get tan if you take melanocyte stimulating hormone. But unfortunately, the FDA took it off the market, a long time ago. In fact, because the gynecologists were using it for a while. And I forget for what, but I think it was helpful for endometriosis, but I could be wrong there. It's a long time ago. I'm not sure about that. But anyway, it was used. I think it was also used to help regulate cycles you know, women's cycles. But they, for some reason, the FDA took it off the market. There was no danger, but I think they just didn't have enough studies. And then we had something called melanotoin 2, which is a derivative of MSH that also caused you to tan and could give erections as well. There's, in fact, well, another derivative of MSH is a medicine for women's libido, which men also use. Anyways, goes down. There's all
these. Human 41.
Yeah, you keep breaking these chemicals down and you get active things. Well, KPV is a very small part of the MSH, but it seems to have a very powerful effect on the immune system. Okay, very nice immune modulator. And it does help quiet mast cells. Okay, and the same thing with the thymosin beta 4 frag. Again, the whole, if you use the TB500, like the bigger piece of thymosin beta, you can actually stimulate your mast cells a little bit. But by using the fragment, we just give the quieting signals to the immune system. And that's what most people need, because I said, it's very rarely a failure to kill that keeps people in chronic illness. I mean, it could be a failure to eradicate, but usually if we can get the immune system, you know, again, to make an analogy, if you're a trained fighter, you throw the appropriate punch. Okay. If you're untrained or just angry, you just flail. And I think that's what the immune system is doing in many of our people. It's flailing. Okay. Because when you quiet all, when you get the mast cells quieter and you get, you use some of these modulators to quiet the immune system, then all of a sudden the infection is often controlled. Okay, so that people have to understand, we're not using immune suppressants, we're using modulation. So the cells that can, that need to do the job can do it effectively, rather than throwing everything out there and the signals get confused, you know?
Right. So then at a high level, go back to the story, and then, you know, a story is everything. A story, because the story at the beginning, there was the story, and but then within that story is the secrets of wisdom around how to get over something and get through something. And I think that you taught me this. Yeah, this is going to be something that you taught me, which is when someone first comes with this angry immune system, there's so many things going on, because if the mast cells are active, they might be active in 5 or 10 places. If there's a neurological infection, there might be 8 or 9 things going on related to that. If you can begin to mitigate some of those symptoms, it clears the water a little bit and allows you to see what's going on, but all of a sudden people start to feel better. And so then and having a way to kind of describe and talk about things and process things, as because I call you and ask you questions and then to talk to patients and be able to talk and guide them through the story. Then to go back to this specific example, and I'll give you another one. If your immune system's angry and it's reacting to everything, it is kind of like you're sitting there throwing punches, but they're probably, none of them are going to land. You call, that KPV and those peptides that regulate that side of the immune system, suddenly you feel better. Go back to cell danger response. What I found is you give somebody some of the mitochondrial peptides and start to get them making energy again, or maybe stack that with other things like NAD, suddenly if they're actually making energy, they feel good. And so then I would say a third of complex illness is regulating the immune system and then getting people sort of both psychically, psychologically, spiritually, metabolomically calm. And then spinning up energy so that there's efficiency of energy production. And then those two things dramatically change the trajectory of what it feels like to have a big problem.
Yeah, and that was really important. What you said there is that it's the order in which you do it. Is that if you don't begin to calm the system a little bit, if you try to throw people with high energy stuff right off, again, if they're just overworked, you know, if they're just, you know, stressed and like, you know, they got a cold and their immune system went off a little bit, but basically everything is working okay, that can sometimes push them through. But if they've been sick for a while and you really are stuck in either cell, whatever you want to call it, the cell danger response or Sears, you know, you got to take some of the fire down before you restore the energy. Or
So I've got a humbling story to tell you about that. This is unfortunately another thing that I learned from you. So then
I want to tell you because I learned, I mean, the reason we talk is I learn a lot. Coming, you know, your stories are always helpful to me for the next day.
Yeah, it's interesting. And, you know, it's interesting because you're called, like, you know, it's kind of like on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? I'm going to call my lifeline, you know. And I have kind of 8 or 10 people who are my lifelines that I call. Yeah, and you're one of those. But so then, you know, we both have done a lot of IV therapy for a long time. And so then, we were early, some of the first people doing NAD therapy, and NAD is a derivative of vitamin B3, but it's kind of like currency in the body that can stimulate immune function, it can stimulate mitochondrial function, DNA repair, does all these things. And we like to give it as a part of our strategy of spinning up those mitochondria and getting energy, you know. Some friends of mine used to, if you call the shot, if you got a shot of NAD, they used to call it best day ever because you would have energy and feel good and stuff like that. And so then I remember I was teaching you about it. And then you called me the next week and said, oh, guess what? You can't give NAD first to really sick people. Because then, and that was a really, and that's an important insight, because it turns out if you give that too much stimulation while there's a lot of angry inflammation going on at the same time, that in a fragile person can be much too much. Yeah. So the sequencing is crucially important. I just wanted to echo that.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I mean, I learned all this stuff because when I first came to California in 98, I inherited a bunch of patients from this fellow doctor, a wonderful doctor, Dr. Jeffrey Anderson, who had been specializing in multiple chemical sensitivities and things of that sort. And so, and he unfortunately got disabled from chemical exposure. So I walked into these people who made no sense to anything I'd ever seen before. You know, they couldn't do anything. I mean, I learned quickly that, step lightly, step very lightly. As I continued, you know, rolling into the really complex Lyme patients, because again, we had them because Dr. Anderson, when he joined me, Wayne Anderson, he had been treating Lyme for almost 10 years already, like under the tutelage of Joe Burascano via the phone. And so we had all these, but what happened is that when he came to join me, he came along with all these patients who hadn't gotten better. You know, because again, we keep learning. And that's my great sadness is I know how many people I saw in the early 2000s and 2010, and even probably 3 years ago that I didn't help, that I now know something that might help, you know, but unfortunately, it costs a lot of money to see us. So like when we're wrong, it's an expensive mistake. It's expensive learning process for us and the patient, especially for the patients. And I just wish that we could, I think we should do this, have a Rolodex of like, you know, the people who I didn't help, and I could go back and go, oh, wait a minute, I got it now.
However, I have this kind of like Grateful Dead like the idea with Grateful Dead and their music was that they shared, people would just share tapes and they gave away their music.
Right.
And what I'm trying to do is give away knowledge and talk about this because, you know, if you think of it over the course of time, we were at the lecture where mast cell activation got sort of presented to the medical community.
Right.
Now we're actually giving you things that you can take. There's supplements that you can take. There's these medications you can take. There's peptides. And then what I think is going to happen is there's such a community-based sort of approach that as these ideas sort of come into a more clarity of understanding among people, then suddenly the sequencing and the ability to kind of work their way through it is gonna come. This the MSH is a big one. And interestingly, there's a theory that MSH actually is important in regulating mucosal barriers. Mm-hmm. So then people that have low MSH are more susceptible to infections in their sinuses, which could be a place where there could be a biofilm to leaky gut. But then in terms of thinking about MSH and sort of the reason why SIRS causes low MSH, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, I can only tell you what, you know, I learned from Dr. Shoemaker years ago, and I have to admit, he might have new teachings now, but in the old days, he felt that the low MSH and low VIP was related to the Marcons, the multiply resistant, not multiply, the methicillin resistant staph in the nose. That created a hemolysin, a chemical that would break down these compounds, that would split them up and destroy them. I don't really know. You know, again, I that was his concept. I don't know if that's his current thinking, but it definitely seems to work. And that was, you know, I think why he left VIP, which was the one that you can still get. I mean, over the, not over the counter prescription, the nasal therapy with vasoactive intestinal peptide, which works very similar to MSH in many areas. It's interesting. It also has anti-parasitic effects. It also protects the mucous membrane. It also has very positive effects on the gut and inflammation anywhere. You know, if you have anybody with fibrosing lung disease, you know, inhale VIP actually will help. But anyway, that being said, he that's why his pyramid, in a way, with Dr. He was like saying the same thing I am, that you have to be careful, you have to do things in an orderly fashion, more or less. It's just that his pyramid is much more structured. Well, he's just a much more structured person. I, as you've figured out by now, am not very I'm a little... I see the hole, and I haven't always followed his teachings. I've often, you know, used interventions at different times than he does. And I think you can. I think you might not get as excellent results if you don't do it, you know, in his order. But many times we're looking, as I said, just to put the fire out a little bit so that person gets some respite and begins to get hope, because, you know, just like when you do the stellate ganglion block, you are removing some sympathetic drive and let the system kind of like take a breath. Well, hope that you can possibly get better, that this isn't your life forever, is the same thing. And so when we give somebody something that reduces the inflammation and lets them have a better day, we can restore hope. And that can trigger so many physiologic events. So I'm sorry, I lost your question already, but yeah, so.
Okay, so then I'm gonna give you this one. I think you'll probably agree with me, yeah. But I'll be curious. Yeah. So then if you, and often we're having one conversation as an analogy to another conversation. And then sometimes and this is a, so mold is a good one because mold we think is related to SIRS. Right. And so then if we could talk about mold as sort of at a strategic high level, and then we understood a sequence of therapy, then as an analogy, then we could begin to compare that to our thoughts of other things like long COVID and stuff right. like that. So then my idea on mold is that one thing that happens is that somebody gets exposed to mold and they may have this biofilm on their nose called Marcons, and then that can cause and then the mycotoxins and actinomyces can cause inflammation systemically that gets into the brain. And then as a result of that, can cause inflammation around the optic nerves, which is why that test called the visual contrast sensitivity starts to go off. And then the immune system gets angry, kind of goes back to what we were talking about before. And then the genetic system can kind of get angry as a result of that. So we've been doing this test, the Gini test, which will look and begin to show that as a result of that immune system being angry, that we start to print more an inflammatory side of our genome, because we're kind of getting mobilized kind of to go have a big fight with this thing that has triggered and created stress for us. Now, then as a result of that, that can actually then cause a whole bunch of downstream aspects of our immune system to go haywire. One of those would be mast cell activation. And then another one of them could be that our ability to regulate the balance between fight or flight and rest and relax kind of goes haywire. And so then when people stand up, their blood vessels can't squeeze appropriately to keep their blood pressure normal. So they get lightheaded and pass out, which is called POTS. So then these are sort of some of the things that happen. Now, then as we think about sequencing, and then as we think about taking care of these patients, then what I'm going to suggest is that long COVID is going to be somewhat have a lot of overlap with that story that I just told. It's not 100%, but many patients will behave like that. Then now, traditionally in the mold conversation, what we did is, so that story that you told, oh boy, they took a binder and then all of a sudden their brain got better. So the idea would be to take binders and kind of fix any infections in the nose. And then at the end, do something that would regulate broadly the inflammation at a genetic level and probably at many other levels for T regulatory cells, all these other things, take VIP and it would calm things down, but you couldn't do it too soon. So people would always wait. Now, I want to hear your opinion. What we found is that the bioregulator peptides, you can give them much earlier and people start to feel better sooner. And so then suddenly, and then, you know, the KPV, which is a segment of MSH, which is this molecule that's too low in these patients. So we start to give them anti-inflammatory, immunomodulatory, and immunoregulating peptides, both at a brain level and at a blood vessel level. So I like Penicillin, I like Cortigen, I like Epitalon, I like Vesigen, which is the one for the blood vessels. And what I found is that constellation sort of calms people down and we get them feeling better. Then we start to kind of spin up mitochondria and get them feeling even better, and then start to layer in things like VAP. So then suddenly it's not this long saga of waiting. And then what I think is that if you think of that as sort of a framework, many of these other kind of chronic infections will behave quite well to algorithms like that. And then we could layer in other theories, but what do you think about that?
Well, I have to say, we're seeing the same thing. And it's Dr. Parpia who really led the way on that, because I was kind of hesitant with the oral peptides initially. You know, I was like, oh, mm-hmm. you know, they're expensive, and do I want to give them? And you got to take. And she, you know, just had an intuition about them and went gung ho. And that's exactly what we saw, is that you could add them in early on, and they allowed everything else to function better, because that's it. Once, you know, this is the point, you know, whether we call it Sears or, you know, I mean, because it said that what you're seeing in the genie, when that transcriptomics, like looking at how much RNA you're making, well, that happens because you're, you know, your mitochondria sent the signals. Well, this is where I won't go into that argument again, but you know, what came first, chicken or the egg? You know, it's just that the signaling for chronic inflammation is on. And if you can change that signal, everything else is possible. Okay. And that's what these peptides do. And I think, I just love your story, that I think is the way. I really think that maybe, I've never asked Richie why he was waiting, because he really felt that you had to deal with the Marcons, and I don't know why, but all, or maybe the VIP just doesn't, but by itself, but using this combination of peptides really does set the stage and allow you then to get the patient to the next levels, which before this, we were walking, it was a lot harder to do. You know, I used to call it pickup sticks. And by using the peptides, we've gotten rid of some of the trickiest of the pickup sticks. You know, we've gotten places where we can be much more, like you say, you can be much quicker to then start adding things in to help increase energy.
Right. Okay. And so then just so to give a little information away for people, because who are listening to this and thinking about this, Vylon is a bioregulator for the spleen thymus. So we like that one for these patients. And I like it. I like that as at a milligram a day. And almost all of the bioregulators, people can take it a milligram a day, and they tend to be low. They tend to be small peptides. And so they tend not to create big reactions. We like Vesigen, especially for people with POTS. We like Cortigen and Pinealon also. And then we like Cardiogen also for people with POTS. We'll put sort of combinations of those together. And the Dr. Cavinson, who is, you know, one of the great, I would say, doctors in the world, has used the bioregulator peptides as an injectable, but he also has them orally. I'm actually taking them, yeah. And I really like taking them. And so then they isolated them as extracts from organically raised animals. And so then the idea would be that these are small molecules, and all of the best peptides to me are these small peptides. GHK is the connective tissue peptide. It's great. It's small. Yep. And KPV. So suddenly there's a whole bunch of tools that we begin to have, some of them oral, some of them injectable, that you can get away with giving to these sick patients. And, you know, it's amazing when you find something that you can get away with giving to them. And interestingly, Cavinson's been giving these to people for 30 years with very good results. And anytime you can get away with doing something for a long time, that it's a signal to me that it's probably a good thing for sick people, and it's probably a good thing for healthy people, which is probably an idea we share.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because, I mean, I know you've done a lot of work in anti-aging, but regenerative medicine world. And what I've always seen is that anything that works for my really sick people is usually good medicine in different doses for people who want to stay healthy.
Right.
It's like we're seeing where the healthy people are going to wind up in one little aspect. But one of the peptides I just want to throw in there, the BPC topical, is something I sometimes mix with the GHK, but sometimes just by itself. Because one of those, like cycles that we see with mast cells is people with the various levels of neck instabilities or just the chronic cervical instability stuff, and you have some really interesting ideas on that, which hopefully you'll talk about another time. But so many people who have severe dysautonomia do have issues with lax ligaments, and lax ligaments get lax when we have chronic inflammation.
So okay, 100%.
It's a round and round. And if you can lower the chronic inflammation through the use of peptides, those lax ligaments will tighten up a little bit, and those autonomic dysautonomic symptoms will diminish a little bit, sometimes a lot. So it's nice to have what I call virtuous cycles, things that we can go in there and start to fix. And then again, the beauty of the body is that it heals, when I was a kid, I was a very short time. I was an auto mechanic, and the front, if you don't do it right, it doesn't work. The beauty of the body is you just got to get close. and we have this inherent healing mechanisms that if we don't screw them up too badly, people get better. And we just have to allow, and that's the beauty of the peptides, and especially the ones that you mentioned, I can see supporting organ function, in a very gentle manner. It sounds just like, what the doctor ordered for getting people to the next step.
And then we should probably wrap it up, but as sort of a conversation, this is a trajectory sort of conversation of where to go. And then as we begin to think of these long COVID and some of these challenges, what we've seen, and I had a great talk with one of Patterson's doctors, and basically we went through, there's going to be a bimodal or trimodal distribution within long COVID. And so for example, when that monocyte gets triggered, then and it has that spike protein in it, one thing you could do is take an AIDS drug that's called a CCR5 antagonist, which will kind of regulate that, and they combine that with a statin, which kind of calms down the inflammation in the vascular system. And so then that's one idea of taking care of COVID vaccine injuries, and then also taking care of long COVID.
Right.
And there's some issues with that medication. There's a black box warning because it had some liver failure, but that was in people that had hepatitis C, who were AIDS patients who were pretty sick. And so they had a hard time teasing that out. But then I've had that be extremely helpful for some people, but not for everyone. And so then we've had peptides be extremely helpful for some people, but not everyone. Okay. And then, another thing that we're recording this now, by the time this goes live, you're going to be doing the same plasmapheresis in your office.
Right.
That we do. And so Eric is an amazing doctor. And if you want to go see him and kind of participate, one of the things that we do is we do this thing, plasmapheresis, where we run your blood through a plasma separator and we pull some of the plasma off. And then what that does is that pulls inflammation and toxicity out of the body and gives the immune system, by detoxing it, a chance to kind of regulate and come out of that kind of angry immune system situation.
Yeah. Well, it goes back to, thinking more and more about these excessive number of antibodies that sick people tend to have. And they are a constant immune, they're noise. Like I said, they're just noise. And the body doesn't like noise. It's listening very closely to to a hum. And when there's noise in there, you start getting dysregulation.
And that noise, and so then the antibodies are all floating around in the plasma, which is why taking some of them out kind of calms down that noise.
Yeah.
And so then at a high level, and what my goal, I think we did it today, was to sort of talk through some of the big immune challenges of the day, recognized that at a genetic level, at a blood testing level, and at a symptom level, we have fairly good ways of beginning to kind of think about and talk about these problems. And then we've got a diversity of ways that we begin to regulate and calm down that immune system. Peptides being one of them, but even over-the-counter medications, yeah. And then sophisticated medical procedures that we do. But then knowing that within that, then there's a song called "A Song for You." It was an old Leon Russell song.
Yep, that's what I thought. Yeah,
Willie Nelson did it, and Ray Charles, and he says, "If the melody doesn't come through, my love is in there hiding." This is kind of is an idea.
Yeah.
And so then our love is I would say in here in this story, and this I think it's our story today is a hopeful story that there's hope on the horizon, and actually it's kind of here today.
Yeah, no, it is. I said we have the invasive and the simple, and we just keep trying to find more of the simple, but we save the more invasive things for when people really need it. But it's just to have that palette that we never had before, and it's really growing, and it's just very, very exciting that we have so many more abilities to help people. Now, unfortunately, if we could just stop the toxification of the planet, maybe we wouldn't need so many skill sets, treatments. But
because of that toxification, I think we'll be in business for a long time. So
unfortunately.
But then I hopefully everybody could live in a beautiful place. I love that background. It looks like a healthy. You're in a healthy environment. I love you, and I'm grateful to have you in my life, and thank you for being on the podcast, and we're going to have to do a lot more of this.
A pleasure, and I said next time, and we'd love to keep one, we'll keep me on one track. That would be an amazing event. Thank you, Matt.
It was perfect. Thank you so much.
Okay.